Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is The Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I am joined by Paige Lavoie to talk about the 1961 children's book, Tom Swift and the Visitor from Planet X, by Victor Appleton II. We talk about the Tom Swift books, the nature and evolution of children's adventure fiction, and the origin of Swifties. The Tom Swift books are an artifact of a bygone era, and it was really interesting to read and discuss them with Paige. There are spoilers, as much as that matters for a Tom Swift book, but I thought I'd tell you. It was a great time talking to Paige. On to the discussion. Hello, everyone. I'm here once again with Paige Lavoie, and we're talking about a book this time. I've had her on to talk about a lot of NaNoWriMo, we probably will get into writing at some point in this. It's inevitable. But we're talking about a book this time. Paige, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to jump into the conversation here. We're talking about reading books instead of writing books today. Craziness.
Yes. We are reading. This is, and when you suggested this, I was like, what? Like, I had no idea what it was, and I looked it up. I'm like, okay, we can do that. I didn't know exactly what to expect, but it pretty much exceeded all of my expectations. we are discussing Tom Swift and the Visitor from Planet X by Victor Appleton II. What a name! This is everything about this is just.
So you read it on the Kindle, right?
I did read it on the Kindle.
So I have like an old vintage, like physical copy of the book, and I found it at like one of the local vintage shops, and man, it is like the cover art. I don't know if you had to see it, like, because I saw on the Kindle app, it's just like this weird blank.
Yeah. It just gives you a description. Yeah, it's just like Tom fights something. I'm like, well, that's not thanks.
So, like, holding the book in my hands, and if you Google it, it's, like, these two kids wearing, like, crazy polyester sweaters, screaming, and, like, there's an explosion and also a giant robot-looking thing.
I believe that's probably the X-Man, right? That has to be the X-Man. The Visitor. The titular Visitor from Planet X.
So I don't know that this is a very popular book choice. For the podcast listeners, how would you jump in and give them like just an overview of what we read?
I want to talk a lot about that, honestly, because it's really as much as the actual contents of the book are interesting in a lot of different ways. I think just as interesting to me is how the Tom Swift books like exist. And their place there's a long history of Tom Swift books. I mean, first published in 1910. That's over 100 years. Over 100 years ago. So there's a children's books mainly for boys. It was like targeting young boys, especially back then in the early 20th century, and then up into this is Planet X is from the second series, which ran from through the 54 through 71. So this and they clever like so they all are written by a lot of different people with and they have a they're all by Victor Appleton or then or the second series cleverly Victor Appleton II, like the son of Victor Appleton, just took under I'm gonna write more Tom Swift. That's what I want to do with my life.
Oh my gosh.
Dear old dad, I'm going to write more Tom Swift, except it's about Tom Swift Jr. this time.
So I literally today was like noticing, I'm like, huh, how like funny that it's Tom Swift Jr. and it's Victor Appleton II. I'm like, I wonder if it was like, and it makes so much more sense that it would be a pen name instead of like an actual son being like, I'm gonna write books like my dad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are father son And familial, you know, there's a lot of families of writers, and that happens. But the fact that the original series is all Tom Swift, and then the second series is Tom Swift Jr., and then they just, all they did with the pen name is just add a second on there. Ugh, it just tickled me.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that.
So they are a children's book series with a pen name written by a variety. Ooh, that's good. Just run my hand in my microphone. I'm gesturing too wildly.
You're too excited.
Yeah, they are written by a variety of people, all with the same pen name until you get to the later series, which they very subtly change the pen name. But they're like, it's the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or any of those series where it's what is it, the Boxcar Kids? I'm trying to think of other ones that were my era. I don't think I can think of any others off the top of my head.
Yeah, Nancy Drew was like a big one for me. I know, like I read a ton of those books.
Well, that was the girl book. Yeah, that's the if you're a boy, you read Hardy Boys. If you are a girl, you read Nancy Drew. That was those are your choices. Although I was also going to mention the other books. It brought me back to my childhood and when I like devoured books, and I don't know if I ever read a Tom, like, if the name sounds so familiar and it feels like something I would have read as a kid, but I'm not, I don't remember it. You know, I remember reading the Hardy Boys. I remember reading Encyclopedia Brown. I do not remember reading any Tom Swift books.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, like, I go over my grandparents' house, if there are going to be these on the shelf, because they have the Nancy Drew books, they have the Hardy Boys books. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if there's like, oh yeah, Tom Swift, we got all of those. Because it looked really familiar when I saw it in the store, but that could also be because the branding is very familiar. Like, if you think of an old Nancy Drew book, it's got the little picture of him in the front, or, you know, it's got the illustrated photo, and then on the side it has, like, this weird, just floating head of Tom Swift with, like, the volume number and the, you know, and then on the back it has every single book in the series printed.
Yes.
So it's all, like, that standard, like, young adult vintage kind of looking book.
Yeah, that was, I had, oh, where was it? I had the writing guidelines. Say, okay, oh. So, but for these books, because obviously there are a lot of different authors are writing them. So they would just, here's the rules. Read the other books. You get the idea. You know what to do. Follow these rules and we'll get put it through our I imagine had one editor that looked at these things and went, no, that's not style guide, right? Let's change that, whatever. But Tom Swift Jr. is a child inventor, a hero. I don't know. He fits into a very neat archetype. It reminds me of Johnny Quest, frankly.
Yeah, that boy genius with like the slightly, well, no, because this guy was really, I was going to say slightly more adventurous best friend, but like he was just as adventurous as the other one. Well, can't remember his name. Bud.
Yeah, Bud. That's the thing that's interesting to me in this, in that the Egghead is the main character, and Bud is more like a jock meathead type to me, and he's like, and that's why it reminded me of Johnny Quest a lot. And that Race Bannon was the sidekick to Dr. Quest, and Dr. Quest was a smart guy, but Race Bannon was more of the, and that just makes me think of the Venture Brothers, but
yeah,
which that's. They were all drawing from this. You know, Johnny Quest is drawing from this tradition of cult pulp stories of spacemen and, you know, laser beams and futurism that never actually would exist. Like, there's never been all these machines they develop are like, oh yeah, we'll be there. It's like, yeah, 25 years, we'll have earthquake machines. Not really. You're not going to have, like, space wheels and rocket cars and all that stuff. That stuff's actually mostly impossible or impractical. And that's the setting in this. That's, like, it's just, like, you're kind of in it as soon as you start reading it. They don't, like, I imagine it's meant to, like, capture a young mind and, like, hey, look at all this exciting stuff happening. Just, boom, throw it all at you.
Yeah. I kind of liked that they didn't, like, information dump. Like, it wasn't like the first chapter was all set up. Like, I don't feel like it really needed that, because while you're reading it, it feels very much like, okay, it's a normal setting, except there are all of these crazy inventions and they're talking about aliens and building stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel too much like you were in some weird, crazy new place. It was, even though it still had like a relatable kind of world feeling. Like, it was still like a cozy house, like that sitcom America sort of vibe.
Yeah, Americana, very it, I mean, I think that's the one thing I would have appreciated more of, and that's just description of the town, like where they are. That's the only thing I was kind of like grasping. I basically did lapse into like, okay, it's Leave It to Beaver. It's you know, it's those types of shows. It's general suburban 50s America, but also outside of town is this giant science base where there's terrorists or whatever, and robots and a lot of stuff, a lot
I would
of
have
things.
liked to see like the town and like the what weird inventions are like the kids playing with. You know what I mean? Like, what sort of weird like hopscotch with jetpacks? Like, what's going on in this world that we kind of like glazed over? I don't know. Hopscotch with jetpacks actually wouldn't work at
Hopscotch
all.
with
So
hops.
don't just ignore that.
Well, I mean, it is. I feel I like that is they. I feel like it is part of just the style of these books is that it's all about Tom. There's no time for anything else. It is like 100% pedal to the metal. What's going on? Action! 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 I think they don't want to lose the chill, like lose a theoretical child. Although there's plenty of kids who can deal with a little bit of world building in their fiction. They can handle it. They love Harry Potter, and that's like 70% is world building in Harry Potter. So I think they can handle, which I mean, I think I mentioned Harry Potter very specifically because you can see mo like modern children's books, and they've grown from this, obviously, but you can see the legacy. You can see that the and you could kind of, I don't know, the DNA is there, the groundwork of let's write children's books that are fun and exciting and full of adventure and weird and crazy inventions, and you know, not worry about, I don't know, this is not going, I don't think this is aiming for an adult audience. This is very clearly, no, we are writing specifically for children, meaning I don't, and I think children meaning people under the age of 18, but I don't know. Like I think this at the time, like in the early 1900s, and even in the, I think by the probably the mid-century, it was a little bit different. But books like this didn't exist. Like kids' books were all about moral lessons.
Yeah, true.
They're like, don't steal. That's the this book is that's all it says. Don't steal. Oh, okay, cool. Fun book for a kid, huh?
Don't steal. Why are there only two words in this whole book?
I,
They
well,
wasted so much paper.
that they, well, there's pictures.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting thought. Like, it makes me curious to look back at more like things that we would consider to be in the young adult genre now, like through history. Like, when did these books really like start and get popular? Was it like in the 50s and 60s? Was it
What?
before that?
Well,
Like,
the Tom Swift books, I looked up the stuff about the Tom Swift books. It's hard to say about greater. I like, I'm sure there are children's lit historians. I know they're out there. I've seen them write actually very interesting articles about it, stuff online. I've read them here and there, but Tom Swift in particular, the original series back from which they say goes from 1910 to 1941, basically up to America's entry into World War II. It was the most popular, was the most successful, sold millions and millions and millions of copies. Tom Swift Sr. Now, if we're taking this book as the modern book, he was in the same vein as Tom Swift Jr. But I feel like it. I what I read in is that in the shift, the second series wasn't as popular, and I imagine some of it is just competition. Because when this first came out in the, you know, 1910, there wasn't anything else like it. And it spawned a lot of imitators. And, you know, obviously they did the same thing, but books for girls, quote unquote. And, you know, they were all very popular because they were new. They were novel, so to speak. And the second series, I think, didn't sell as well. But also in the second series, there was a shift in how Tom Swift Jr. and how Tom Swift Jr. was kind of characterized a little bit, and how technology was shown. Like, that seemed to be a big point in a lot of the stuff I read. Was the original series was very pulp heavy, was very all rocket ships and rocket cars and jetpacks and stuff like that, and they didn't bother to explain the science at all. Like, it was just like, oh, there's rocket ships, whatever, we take a rocket ship. In this book, although I think to us, I was a little bit like, oh, right, of course. They every time they throw in, like, yeah, we use the light waves hit this at the same time as, like, but from what I understand, that is even a greater focus on actual science terms and actual science than the original books were. Like, this was actually a slightly more educational than those original series books were. Although, it's still kind of cheesy. Fun, though. It's fun. I enjoyed it. I like it.
So I had, like, the dumbest brain fart while you were talking about the original series. Because I was like, oh, yeah, because it's about Tom Swift Jr.'s dad. So he wouldn't be... Like, I was imagining the original series was just about him as the dad. Like, my brain didn't take it back in time to, like, before Tom was born and everything. Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
I was... yeah, so in my head, it wasn't like him as a young man. It was like him as a dad with his own book series. And, like, that was so dumb. Oh, my God. So,
Tom Swift Sr. as a child.
Right. No, like, that makes perfect sense. But as soon as you started talking, and I went on my little ramble of, wow, I wonder, like, when these books started, like, but for teenagers, it did not dawn on me that, like, the original series was Tom Swift Sr. as a teenager. Like, oh, my God.
I'm not...
Need more coffee.
How old are these? How old is Tom?
Okay, so it says Tom... In this book, it mentions that he's 18, and that blew my mind because I thought he was supposed to be like a 14-year-old, 13-year-old, something like that. But it was like the young 18-year-old inventor. And I'm like, oh, he's not like as young as I thought he was going to be.
I think it is. I think it, well, that all that tells me is that, yes, this was definitely like in the time period. Of course it was, but it was marketed definitely towards boys because boys always, they're like, when you're a young kid, you are like, oh man, I can't wait till I'm a teenager. I can't wait till I'm 18. That'd be so. They're like half very scary and half very awesome. Like older kids, you're like, wow, they have a car. And that's very clearly like he is a kind of an idol type figure. I imagine for like younger boys reading this book, they're like, wow, this guy's like he's just still a teenager, but he's an adult and he's basically the boss whenever his dad's not around. He runs this just giant a company in which I'm not sure what they do. They do research, but and they make things. I guess they sell them to the government. They're basically an arms manufacturer.
I was kind of picturing them like Stark Industries, you know, like big inventions and weapons and also like new technology. And they're like this. Like just a bunch of innovators and inventors working for the greater good.
Yeah, the greater good, of course. Never bad. No.
No.
Never.
No.
Not bad. Only good. Not like Tony Stark. But I mean,
go ahead. I was just gonna say, like, just man, this did have such a like Americana, like good guys versus bad guys, just like black and white, no gray areas. Like it's really like reading it was such like a time capsule piece, you know, just with the good and the bad, right? Like you get a peek into like how they wrote sci-fi in children's books back then, but also some of the language used, you're like, ooh, that would not, you can tell when this was written.
Yeah, they oriental, I believe, is
yeah,
they were they used multiple times, but I mean
time capsule.
Just be happy. Just be happy. Just be happy. We didn't read one of the books that is about Africa.
Oh, jeez.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying there was,
Yeah.
it could have been worse. Because I read an article about how those books describe Africa as a whole. It's not great.
Nope.
I mean, it was written in, when did this book come out?
This one was like, let me see. I'm holding the book. I think
61.
1960. Yeah.
61. So, and like, and you read through it and you think about, oh, it's 1961. That makes perfect sense. Height of Cold War, and patriotism, and I'm gonna start breaking out a quote. My
Oh,
first
are you doing it?
I
Oh,
got I
man.
got a quote. Let's see. I made a promise in the name of the United States government, and the promise will be kept. That's one of the, I believe, a CIA agent says that. And
Wow, you didn't want to read Great Billowin' Buffaloes?
I got some from Chow. I got a quote from Chow too. I want to talk about Chow a little bit. The other quote, besides, you can't blame an American for not liking the idea of his ha having his home searched. Which I don't know. It's very interesting.
Oh, that guy, that was like right what where we right before we meet the Bulgarian spy,
Oh.
right?
Yes, the I when I first saw Brungarian, I'm like,
Oh, is
whoa.
that is oh my gosh, my brain just
Well, it's not,
changed that.
it's no accident that it's so close. I
Oh.
mean, it is meant to that it
Oh,
I'm
you're
like
right.
and I was just like, oh, okay, got it. Brungarians, right. They never say where Brungaria is. They say they have accents, never describe the accent. It's very clear. They're like, hey, these guys are basically Russians, but we can't use Russians because we don't want to. I don't know why. Like, they have no qualms about using America. Why not just make the Russians
Yeah.
the enemies? Whatever. But it is Brungarian. There's also a fake Asian country they use occasionally. I forget the name of it. Let me see if I can.
Is it the same where they just like threw a random couple letters in there and I probably just didn't even notice?
Oh wait, no, the other fictional nation, Cronjovia. So Cronjovia and Brungaria.
Oh my gosh.
So good countries. But they're like there it is a like everything in this is Cold War analogs to Russia, basically. You know, the terrorists
Yeah.
are they have accents and they're dangerous and they want our weapons and we Tom Swift and the good old USA are the good guys, no question about it. The CIA agent definitely wouldn't lie to a terrorist they've captured in order to get information from them. No siree, Bob. They just let him go.
They did, yeah.
Even though that terrorist was a double triple agent, I guess.
Man, I was so mad like when I got to that part and he like came over to the Swift's house and it was just like, well, I'm really sorry. Ha ha ha. It was like he shared a hearty laugh with us and we all just moved on. And what a funny thing that happened. Ha 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 ha. I was just like, he held a gun on you. That's not okay.
Yeah, it's I mean,
But you know, he was working for America and he
he
didn't want to.
didn't want to do that. He had to though.
No, and
Even
he
though he
couldn't
was
go.
alone with Tom's I mean, he could have just said, "Hey Tom,
I'm a double
I'm a
agent.
double agent, so I'm going to act like I'm doing all this stuff. Just play along with
Go
me.
with it, man.
We'll work together." He isn't like Tom Swift Jr. is like the one of the smartest people on Earth apparently. So, I think he could handle the information.
Oh my gosh.
But
Yep.
he didn't. It's fine. It's all plot. I mean, I think
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't know why they had to make that guy a good guy at the end. Maybe they just like there's really not many. I think it felt like I don't know this. It feels like they just couldn't. They didn't show any actual like no one we meet is a bad guy,
Yeah.
actually.
Yeah, you're right.
Everyone we meet is either a fake bad guy, or what is that guy's name too? Oh, it's oh man, it's
Oh,
really bad. His fake name.
his fake name? Oh no. Yeah, it was well, is this a fake name? Narco?
I thought that was a fake name, but who? I don't. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's actually. It doesn't make. I don't. again, I don't really know. I'm just like, it felt like a very like a person who's never been to Eastern Europe making up, trying to think of what a Eastern Europe name sounds like. But we meet him, but he's now actually a bad guy. And all the Brungarians, bad people, are far away, or they're in a submarine, or they're doing things off camera. You don't really meet them. They're just kind of a unknown threat out there. But every named character like is either that guy or some townspeople that I didn't mean anything by it. I just wanted some money, or I didn't mean anything by it. I thought it was harmless.
Yeah, I needed that's
to,
true.
I needed to, whatever. I don't. So I don't know what that if that was just like a weird editorial decision where like, no, we can't actually show real bad guys in the book. Like everyone in we meet is a good guy in the end. Like it's just like a weird moral.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if that was a like choice, like a part of the guidelines and the rules and stuff, like that they didn't actually want to introduce like big evil kind of crazy characters, like if they wanted to keep it like a I'm not sure how to phrase this, like just keep it very like everything was safe all along, like I don't know.
I mean it's I mean there are still people today when they are giving their children fiction, when they're giving them books to read or anything mm-hmm. where they are concerned about the content and concerned about giving kids things that are too mature for them or too dangerous, whatever that word means. And that's my gut instinct is that
I think you're right.
That's my gut instinct is that it is just, no, these books are safe and it's okay for your kids to read them. Yeah, they're adventurous and full of excitement and inventions and science and bad guys and good guys, but the good guys win. And even I frankly, if like for a children's book to take place during the Cold War and then actually have a spy in it, that could be pretty threatening to a kid. Who might like start thinking that everyone is a spy or something. I mean,
that's fair.
There's enough adults who do that already. So probably having the kid there say, no, actually that one guy, he was just faking. You know, he was actually a good guy. The good guys won and there's only good guys in America.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
Man, there were some great lines and stuff that were so just like that, like Americana apple pie. Like they were describing, oh my gosh, what was it? They were describing breakfast. It was like, well, maybe this isn't, I don't know. One of those like time capsule moments it was like man-sized portions of eggs and ham. And I was like, what does that mean? They were just big.
I mean, there are TV dinners right now called Hungry Man.
That's true.
They are sold in grocery stores. I've eaten them.
Man-sized. I have two.
They should just call them glutton-sized. I feel like that's a more apt term where it's like
glutton-sized.
Do you like eating more than you should? This is for you. And that is for me. Thank you very much. I like sodium. Mm-mm-mm. I mean, there was a hasty breakfast.
Yeah,
He ate a hasty. I don't know that. I was just highlighting random things that seemed emblematic of this of the story as a whole. So phrases like a hasty breakfast. That is a thing that itself is not what this is. But I don't know if you've ever heard. Have you ever heard of the term of a Tom Swifty?
No.
a Tom Swifty. Uh-huh. Here, this is from Wikipedia officially, is a phrase in which a quoted sentence is linked by a pun to the manner in which it is attributed. So, nope. This is excerpts from Tom Swift books as examples. When you don't use the word said, when you have no professor cried Miss Perkman indignantly, lots of adverbs and lots of non-said verbs. Lots of cried, yelled, appealed, screamed. Stammered.
You wow, you okay, so I opened to a random page and here I have replied, stared, nodded, and that's all I see on this one. But yeah, totally. Oh, gasped weakly.
I'll have a martini easy on the vermouth, said Tom dryly.
That's okay.
The last time I'll stick my arm into a lion's mouth, the lion tamer said offhandedly.
Oh, no.
I might as well be dead, Tom croaked. We just struck oil, Tom gushed. It's freezing, Tom muttered icily.
Oh, my God. That's kind of amazing, though.
Swifties. Well, I mean, wow. Read Harry Potter.
Right.
That is everywhere. That kind of language J.K. Rowling uses all the time for the hard and fast rule of writing. Don't use anything but said ever. But then, you know, Harry Potter sold 100 billion copies, and all J.K. Rowling does is like, hey, Harry cried, Ron wept, Hermione yelled, stuff like that. It was done so much in these books that they were called Swifties.
Wow. You know, I noticed some stuff when I was reading through it. Another big thing was it's very, so I'm sure with like writing advice and stuff, you've seen the articles that are like very show, don't tell. And like, this is a story that's very like told to you, like as you're reading it. And it's not that that's necessarily bad, but there were moments when I kind of had that flashback feeling to drudging through a book, like, because I had a book report due the next day, like, you know, like that, like, dry sort of sometimes there were moments that I was like swept up in the story, but there were a lot of moments where it really felt like I was like had to like focus on getting to the next page.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, my eyes glazed over a couple times.
Oh my gosh. I put on the audiobook because it's free on YouTube, and I was like, okay, well then maybe I can like be moving around and get some stuff done. I was falling asleep on the couch, and I was like, nope, gotta get up. I would rather just read it.
Yeah. It's not like these people writing these books were bad writers. Mm-hmm. It's just they were paid, I imagine, by the word or by like very like easy comp, you know, they were on for the specific work for hire, basically, you know, like write this book, we'll pay you this much money, we own the book after you're done with it. It's not like you can't write a book like this about kid adventure and not have it have like some of the kind of lazy and bad writing stuff in it. I think it's just a product of the people writing it. They don't have their name on it. They are getting paid a flat rate for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have guidelines. It has to be a very specific length, etc. And it's just, they have all these things that are happening in this book. So they're just like, yeah, there's it. Not only do we have an alien energy from Planet X, from our alien friends, as they say, visiting, we have to make a good impression on this alien energy. They also have the evil Brungarians, they have earthquake machines, and they're setting off earthquakes. So Tom has to stop the earthquakes, and also along with kind of the day to day goings on of Tom Swift and his father and his friends and girlfriends. I guess
you know. One of them was the sister, and then the other one was, I think, kind of a girlfriend-ish. The girls in this book were not a priority, like, clearly.
Yes, they were. They were there.
They showed up with sandwiches.
Well, what else are girls good for?
Oh, God. Right? Well, no. Oh, I said right like I was agreeing. Like, right? Oh, my gosh. What else can we do? No, but, like, it's just the Hardy Boys had Nancy Drew in contrast. I don't think that there's a female Tom Swift sort of book where it's like she's a space inventor and doing all this crazy stuff.
Well,
and
that's too much for a poor girl's brain. They can't handle all that.
But I want that. I was just like, man.
Well,
like,
hey,
write it.
Paige, be the change you want in the world.
I know, true. I'm thinking about it.
I mean, there's the recent Was it? Oh, what the hell is the name of the new? There's a new Wasp comic, and also the new Iron Man, the Iron Heart. Both of those are young girls who are inventor science people. So at least they exist now. Just not
That's
in
true.
1961.
Oh
Might have
yeah.
been a little bit.
I think so. I think 1960s they were like, girls don't like science.
I'm looking.
Let's have two cuties show up with picnic baskets. And
There's a
you're like,
lot
oh,
of there's. I
fine.
mean, Nancy Drew existed back in the day. She wasn't a science. I mean, not strictly, not inventor type. I'm looking at there. Okay, so in my research, also we're bouncing around, but I don't care.
Oh,
Tom's
sorry.
no, it's fine. Tom Swift was published by a publisher with the most sinister name I've ever heard for anything. The name There's a publisher, and this it's a founded by Edward Straitmeyer, and he produced and published all of those books: Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Tom Swift, Bobbsey Twins, which was, I think, more famous back. There you go.
Oh,
So he noticed that there was a vacuum in the market, that there's these he could make these kids' books that were more than just moral lessons, basically. And they were all published by the Straitmeyer Syndicate. And
wow.
that's straight I get it, Straitmeyer, sure. The guy's name is Straitmeyer. But the Straitmeyer Syndicate?
It sounds super
That
evil.
sounds like a Bond villain. Yeah, it's not
Yeah.
but there are I'm looking at a list of all the books, all the series published by the Straitmeyer Syndicate over the years. With there's Motor Girls,
Okay.
there's Outdoor Girls,
All
ooh,
right.
there's Amy Bell Marlowe's Books for Girls by Amy Bell Marlowe, of course. Moving Picture Girls, Corner House Girls, Bunny Brown and his sister Sue. So Sue and Bunny is the guy's name. We
Wow.
have the YMCA Boys. I guess that meant something different in 1916. Four Little Blossoms. I'm picking random names. They're Hardy Boys. There's Hardy Boys. They start in 1927. Nancy Drew, 1930. A lot of mystery stories as you enter the 30s. And then most of these characters were invented very early on, and then most of them were just they kept serializing more books as the years went on. Because most of them, see, Nancy Drew has 175 books. The Hardy Boys have 190. Everything else is in two under 3 digits. So in 2 digits. But there's room for women, girls, girl inventor adventure stories. I think I have read the Marvel Comics ones, the comic books about those characters. I'm sure
You're just like, wait, ladies can invent stuff.
they
It's
can. They
they
I mean,
can.
they can. They can.
Obviously. But
Obviously.
yeah, it was kind of interesting, I guess, just like, so there was the one scene where for some reason they went on a boat trip and it was like
I
some weird
was
double date.
also they
It
had of a
lasted.
yacht. Like that's the craziest thing to me. I'm like, oh wait, that was the first step to me. I'm like, oh right, these guys are rich. Like these people are all rich.
And so all of a sudden they're on a yacht. They have like a picnic basket. And there was like this weird detail where it was like the girls forgot their swimsuits. And I'm like, okay. And it's like, so they just sunbathed on the deck. I was like, all right. Like, why is that included? That's so weird.
Well, Paige, you can't have young boys
Girls
and young
in
girls
bikinis.
in swimsuits in the water together alone. God,
No.
you know what they would do? They would KISS, maybe.
Oh my God, you're right. No, I mean I grew up like with a lot of conservative families in like homeschool co-op. So yeah, that was actually a thing that people were like, we can't go to the pool party because Jesus is watching. And you're like, okay, that's fine. But
Leave
yeah, I
room
hadn't really thought
for
about that.
Jesus.
Yeah. But yeah, so within seconds, like you're reading through this, you're like, oh, this is kind of cute. You're getting a peek into their life. And like, are they dating? Are they not dating? And then it was like tidal waves and
Yes, the tidal wave
people are
attacks.
drowning. And all of a sudden it's like, and then they were at home eating sandwiches. I'm like, what happened? Like there were a lot of these moments with
They're
like intense
fine.
action. And then the next page you'd flip and it would be like, and then everything was okay.
That's yeah. That's that. I mean, that's basically the entire. I mean, the stakes are low, and I'm like, even though the stakes are low, aren't low? Like, oh no, the Brungarians are going to destroy you, Washington D.C. with an earthquake machine. Every step along the way, they kind of, I think they disarm the tension a little bit because
Yeah, they do.
they don't want it to be too suspenseful. They don't want it to
So
be too dangerous.
I took a picture of this page because as I was reading it, I was like, no, what? And it's an example of that like tension that like immediately builds and then it's just like not an issue anymore. So it was at the end of the chapter and it's, but just as the outpost, I can't talk, but just as the outpost operator's voice came through, the radio set exploded in Tom's face. You flip the page and it's Skipper, Bud cried anxiously as Tom staggered back, his hand to his face. It's all right, no harm done, Tom assured his friend. Both boys were a bit shaken, but nevertheless, and then it just continues on. There's a brand my flapjacks. What happened? And you know, he brought a tray of fruit juice to the lab after he heard the explosion outside. You know, the friendly cowboy cook that you said you have
Yeah,
thoughts
Chow. I love Chow. Chow is
on.
spectacular. He is my favorite character, and it's not even close. Charles Chow Winkler.
Chow.
He let's see. Brand my space biscuits. That's one. My favorite. This is my favorite one. Is also brand my tumbleweed salad.
Oh man, that is a good one.
I mean, it is ridiculous.
I liked brand my rattlesnake stew. That was a good one.
He's like a guy. He's like a 50 Goes West character. It's
Yeah.
he is a cartoon, and I think I like him a lot because he is. I think because that character is basically unabashedly silly for the most part, and a lot of these other characters are very self-serious about. Like, I feel like Chow realizes what book he's in.
Yeah. Okay, so what was your favorite Chow moment?
I think it has to be the gum, right? It has to be
Oh my
him.
God, yes.
It has to be him trying to feed the robot. Like, it has to be the, it's just I and it's at that moment I'm like, really? Really, Chow? It's there's
Think I
not
might have
even
messed
that there's
that up.
nothing even in there. Like, it's just an empty robot. Like, there's no the energy isn't even in the robot yet. He's just like, where do you put the food in this robot, in this thing? It has to eat, right? And he just
Was he
throws
trying to feed
gum.
it, or was he using it as a trash can? I thought he was using it as a
I
trash
thought he
can.
was like legitimately like, well, he's a cook, and he goes like, well, and how does he engage with the world? He makes food and he feeds it to people. He takes care of people with food. And so they're like, and clearly he's not smart because he's just there. They Thompson Jr. And his compatriots, like, he I guess pokes his head in or something, and they're like, yeah, it's gonna be the alien's gonna live in there. And he's like, well, how do you feed it? I thought, and he like, well, they leave, and he throws one, like, chewing gum is not food,
No.
first of all. Like, no one eats no one eats chewing gum, and two, what do you, Chow? At least he comes clean. I'll give him that. You know,
Yeah, immediately.
he's a very innocent kind of guy. He's a very like, I only met for the best. I thought I'd give that spaceman some chewing gum, and he'd be better.
But then they also like tied it into the America thing where they were like, well, now that he's had bubble gum, we need to give him a proper name and baptize him. Like,
Yes, his name, the X-Man, which I believe the X-Men by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, the comic book was originally in 1963, 1964. So
We
it's
know
just
what books they were reading.
they well, Stan Lee was I his writing prowess, despite all the hype, is about it is about this. It is about this level of pulpy science fiction stuff. So I don't say he's like necessarily invented the word X-Men or anything, but I don't know
No,
if he
I'm
was re
teasing.
I don't know if he read, but it's just funny that I immediately went, well, sorry, Tom Swift, your X-Man is not the pre is not number one X-Man anymore.
No.
He's no
Well,
Wolverine.
they did spell it different,
They did.
though. It's like, it's not hyphenated, it's not
No.
X. Man.
And it's EX as well, so who knows? But, I mean, there's a lot of, like, you read the Marvel comics before the superheroes, you know, when they published, like, monster stories and horror stories and stuff like that. And there's a lot of characters that would show that later showed up as superheroes in kind of very rough draft kind of ways. There's like, there's a version of Magneto. There's a version of Doctor Strange. There's a version, like, there's all these characters we learn later on in the superhero comics. They were kind of prototype rough draft versions of those characters. And it's like this, you know, this is like a X-Man. Like, and I mean, come on, the word, it's a letter X. It's not like there's other pulp and like science fiction stories that weren't like, and Planet X is a thing in Marvel Comics too. There is a Planet X.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Oh, I forgot to say my favorite Chow moment.
Oh, okay.
It was, whenever he puts, they have just finished building their like, kind of robot skeleton for the brain energy. No, brain energy. You know, to live inside. He puts his little handkerchief around like what you can assume is like the neck of the robot. It's cowboy hat on the top, and everyone's just kind of like, ha-ha. It's like this weird, like, just moment of humor. Like, he was definitely like the comedy relief, where without him, this book would not have been funny at all. Like,
there is a line later on where Bud says, "I guess you're right," Bud agreed, wiping away the tears of laughter. "I'll remember just as long as Chow promises not to serve us any more armadillo soup or rattlesnake salad." Chow's fondness for experimenting with weird dishes was a standing joke around Enterprises. So, where is Chow sourcing the armadillos?
Oh, man. That's a great question.
He's making armadillo soup. Where is he getting armadillos from? Does he, like, leave out garbage and hope they come around?
I hope so. I hope that's his, like, home life, you know?
He lives by himself, and he has just, like, cages full of, like, Western animals.
Oh, God, that's so sad.
And he has all names for him.
Also, like,
sorry, okay. Ernest, you're in the soup today.
No, that's probably right. That feels true to character to me.
I'm writing a Chow solo adventure.
I like it.
Young man Chow before he's weird, like, disenfranchised Tom and crazy.
Square. Fan fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure. I guarantee you it's out there. I guarantee you that there is fanfic for Tom Swift.
There's fanfic for everything.
Exactly. If it exists, there's fanfic for it.
It's true.
What were you saying?
What did you think about, I've been curious about this because I definitely have some feels, but like the way that they introduced this energy, like creature sort of alien from Planet X, and like their treatment of it, and like what were your like impressions of how all that went? Did it go like how you expected it to go, or did it kind of throw you off?
Well, it was strange from the beginning because it's not actually an alien,
right?
It's like a weird AI almost. It's like a weird like intelligence that is that they send here. We own for a bit and show it Earth so that they get an impression of Earth. And then we have it in a place so they can take it back.
Yeah.
So it's not, I was never sure if it was alive. Like, it seems to be sentient, but it doesn't, like, it's not an alien. It's just, like, brain energy.
Yeah.
Which, that's a lot of, and obviously they did not talk about any of that. So I'm just like, all right, it's a brain energy. And I don't know if it's alive or not. We're not going to confront the fact that they're confining and basically enslaving this brain energy to do their bidding. But we're going to skip all over that. But as smart as they make Tom to be, you want to impress these aliens, your alien friends from Planet X. So what you do with the energy that they send you is put it in a robot shell and then get it kidnapped so that it can spy for you. That seems like it won't make a great impression on the aliens.
Mm-mm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and also like have it, because they kind of introduced it like, it was going to be some sort of intelligent being of some sort, even though it was like brain energy. Like it was like they wanted to impress it and make a good impression and impress like the people from Planet X and all of that. But at the same time, as soon as it got there, it was like bumbling around the lab and they had it doing really weird like tasks. Like that scene where it tried to go up the stairs and then it failed to go down this up the stairs and it fell. They were like, you felt really bad for it, and they were all just like, well, this is actually very impressive because now we know that it feels fear. I was like, yeah, it's in like a weird tin body and trying to go up steps. It's never had like a like they treated it like it was like a intelligent like friend. Sometimes they were like, oh, it's our friend from Planet X, and sometimes they treated it like it was a like an animal where
Yeah,
Chow like
it's like a nice,
routinely
it's
calls
just
it
like
a
a, it's a,
critter.
it's like a dog.
Yeah, it was just really odd because like to me, I wasn't like as soon as they started treating it like it was like a robot dog thing, I was like, at no point in time before this did I ever think of this like intelligent brain energy as a puppy. But okay.
Yeah, it has to be simple. Like they
Oh
can't.
yeah, no,
They
totally.
can't. And that's what I'm like. I just told myself every step along the way. I'm like, it has to be simple because, like, it's interesting to me. Like, I'm fascinated by any kind of science fiction story about kind of intelligence and how we confront it that when it looks different than us. And like, there's a million science fiction stories and even like shows built around and shows and books and art built around that dilemma. But this book, where like they're building robot suits and fighting Brungarians, like with anti-earthquake machines, like I don't like. Yeah, I get it. You're not gonna. It's more of a practical matter. Like, and that's why I would go like, what happens when their brain energy goes back to Planet X? Like, and it's talking to the X aliens, and they're like, okay, what happened? And he's like, well, okay, I landed. And I'm in this weird robot suit, right? And I'm like totally energy, right? So I'm not used to that. And then they're making fun of me because I can't walk upstairs. And then like they gave me like weird ears, like, and so I can kind of like give them text messages. But then I got kidnapped like by these other guys, and I spied on. I didn't know what lying was because we are totally pure beings with only we don't know what we don't understand the concept of deception, but they taught it to me. They taught me to lie. So now I lied to the one guys that were bad apparently, and then I told the truth to the other guys, and then it turns out they were all good guys. So no problem.
This is how you corrupt an entire planet
And
of
then
pure
so the
beings.
next the I fully expect the next Tom Swift novel to be like, Planet X sent us a message. They're not really interested in any further relations. Goodbye.
No.
If you come too close, we'll blow you up.
No. Planet X are probably like, wow, Tom Swift is a genius.
He built a text message robot for this brain energy. Eventually,
Oh.
it talked eventually. It did,
That
and
was the
they gave it speech.
It was like that last scene before we find out that the guy was a double agent all along. He was like, "Hello, Earth friends," and everyone's like, "Yay, he talked." Oh my gosh. But that was the best breakdown of like the whole plot with the visitor from Planet X. Like,
I mean,
yeah, this
and
is a lot of weird stuff to have this thing do, but okay.
yeah, I just I because I like well, I that's way more interesting to me than the earthquake stuff. Like, I don't,
Yeah, me too.
I just don't like. I know they're not gonna let Washington D.C. get blown up. Like, I know it's not gonna happen. So Tom's machines, anti-earthquake machines, which that was a very spectacular demonstration of trying to explain some machine that causes earthquakes. Yeah, it shoots stuff through the earth into fault planes, and that makes earthquakes. Science.
Science, can't argue with it. It's in a book.
Yeah, and Tom's machine, all it does is shoot the it shoots different waves, and it's fine. It stops it. Yep. All right.
Science.
Cool. I was just like, okay, I'm totally on board with this weird spy alien, in a robot suit doing stuff. That's cool. I don't know about this earthquake stuff. I'm like, eh, it's fine.
No,
They'll get it
that's
done.
how I felt too. I was like, I want more of like our new alien pal. Like he got kidnapped, I feel like, so fast. Like,
Did
you
you have a
know?
did your book have the typo?
Oh, what typo? It might have.
Unless I'm in a crazy person, I'm fairly certain they spelled kidnapped wrong.
Oh, they might have. I might have glazed over the word, so like just, not paid
Well,
tons of attention to
the chat one of the chapters is called is I think it's called Kid Ike. Let me
it.
look.
Oh, it was in the chapter?
The
Wait.
yeah the number chapter 15 is kidnapped, but in the Kindle edition, kidnapped is spelled with only one p,
No, you're right.
and that's not how you
Yeah.
spell kidnapped. Kidnapped has two
Kidnapped.
p's in there. That's kidnapped, and that's not a word.
That's not a word, but that's what
And
happened.
every time they spell kidnapped in the in that chapter, it is also spelled incorrectly.
Wow, I wonder.
They need better co maybe copy editors were different in 1961, but
Maybe we're all just spelling it wrong now.
that's assuming that this book was edited, which not necessarily sure that there was a very strict process for all
Yeah.
that in for these books at least. There's a lot of them, so I don't know if they had the time. Here, I like this exchange. It's Tom explaining how these earthquakes. Tom got up from his stool and paced about the laboratory. Suppose the Brogarian rebel scientists have invented some sort of shockwave producer, a device for sending vibrations through the Earth's crust or at the mantle underneath. We'll see, blah, 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 blah. Wherever the cro wave crosses an earth fault or another wave, boom, an earthquake. And then Bud stared. No kidding. Is that how those rats triggered off all those quakes? It must be, Tom declared. It's the only possible explanation.
Yeah, it's the only way.
It's the only way it could be is if they did this.
That's how good science happens. It's just you pick one thing and you stick
Yeah.
with it.
Yeah,
It's there's
exactly.
no room for questioning or researching it.
Or
Nope.
hypothesis.
Probably just that one thing.
And the name of his anti quake device, which I very apt. Tom grinned. Chow told me last night this gadget looked like a fire plug under a rose trellis. And I ought to call it Fireplug Rose, but I've given it a more dignified name, the Quakealyzer.
He should have went with Chow's
Yeah,
idea.
Fireplug Rose, that's a cool, I like that name. That's a good name.
That's the name of our new metal
Yeah,
band.
Fireplug Rose, that's a good name. And
Yeah.
Quakealyzer, come on, man. That's I don't know, it's very of the time period, I suppose, but I Chow's name is better. Fireplug Rose is pretty dang good. I like that I don't know if where I read this before or somewhere, but Tom has a bunch of little computers that he calls little idiots.
Wait, I missed that.
That is spectacular. That's genuinely amazing. I want to say like that's either if that is their idea, because I want to say I've read that somewhere else. I can't find anything for calling it little idiots, but I want to say that's like a common way to describe like dumb machines that are disposable, but regardless, it's great. Like little tiny dumb computers, little idiots. That's really good.
Little, yeah. Oh my God. That might have been one of the places I was dozing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean it's easy to get like lulled by the rhythm of the writing. It's just like, gee, guys, let's go and do the earthquake now. And then, yeah, Tom, but great idea. And then it goes would go off and describe like Bill worked for the CIA, and Bill was gonna go handle that for Tom. You know, Tom didn't really do a lot of the work himself. He was a manager. You know, he was delegating, supervising.
There were a lot of like weird side character tangents where like for half a paragraph it would tell you what everyone else was gonna do and you were like, yeah, cool, good luck.
All right.
I did like it though. Like, I mean, I don't know.
No, it's fun. I think that my thing is I happily read this and I think it's fun and I would definitely suggest I would say pick up any of the Tom Swift books. This one is as good as any probably. I don't know if there's like snobs among the Tom Swifties who are like, "No, you can't read that one. That one wasn't as good as the third one of the th whatever." But I feel like they are, it's really interesting about it, like, because it's written in 1961, because it's like a part of this, you know, Straight Meyer Syndicate book series, because of the Swifties, like all those things are really interesting. And like you said, it's like a time capsule in a lot of ways of seeing how we write has changed, how we write for children has changed, how, like, all that stuff is very different now, but there's still a little bit of that DNA. Paige, are you ready for the writing guidelines for the Straight Meyer Syndicate?
I am. I'm ready.
Okay. Number one, all books would be part of a series. So no solo, there's no solo books. Everything's part of a series. To establish more quickly if a series was likely to be successful, the first several volumes would be published at once. These first volumes are often called, gross, breeders.
Oh, gosh.
That's gross. Number three, the books would be written under a pseudonym. This would provide apparent continuity of authorship even when an author died, and would disguise the fact that series were written by multiple ghostwriters and plot outliners. The books would look as much like contemporary adult books as possible, with similar bindings and typefaces. The books would be of a predictable length. Chapters and pages should end mid-situation to increase the reader's desire to keep reading. I mean, I could... That's kind of good writing advice in general.
Yeah, that is.
That's not, you should, not all writing should do that, but, like, if you're trying to, like, write something with suspense, like, obviously, cliffhangers, each book would begin with a quick recap of all previous books in that series in order to promote those books. Books might also end with a preview of the next volume of the series. Nancy, ... could not help but wonder when she might encounter as strange a mystery as the recent one. Such a case was to confront her soon. The clue of the whistling bagpipes. The books would be priced at 50 cents rather than a more common 75 cents, dollar, or $1.25. Characters should not age or marry. Protagonists of early series such as the Rover Boys, Tom Swift, and Ruth Fielding did grow up and marry, but sales dropped afterwards, prompting the syndicate to make a rule that characters never marry.
Wow, that does make sense, though.
Yes, it's like Spider-Man. He's not allowed to grow up.
Yeah.
Can't marry Mary Jane for too long. Got to be single. that was the guidelines. And then, what was it? Who's this guy? Adams? Who's Adams? It's one of his daughters. It's one of straight modern. So when he, the 86 Simon & Schuster purchased the syndicate from its partners, who were various children and relations of the original Straight Meyer. But Adams says, they don't have hippies in them, and none of the characters have love affairs or get pregnant or take dope. Fair. It's fair.
Yeah. There are no hippies in these books.
No hippies. No, everyone has haircuts you can set your watch to. I think this is the other thing that's interesting. For decades, libraries refused to carry into syndicate books, considering them to be unworthy trash. Whoa! Series books were considered to cause mental laziness, induce a fatal sluggishness, and intellectual torpor. Series books were considered to ruin a child's chances for gaining an appreciation of good literature, and to undermine respect for authority. Much of the contempt for social conventions is due to the reading of the poisonous sort of fiction. Franklin K. Matthews, chief librarian for the Boy Scouts of America, wrote that series books were a method, according to the title of one of his articles, for blowing out the boys' brains. And psychologist G. Stanley Hall articulated one of the most common concerns by asserting that series books would ruin girls in particular by giving them false views of life, which will cloud her life with discontent in the future.
Oh my gosh.
And we've been talking about how innocent these are. And how, yeah, how idealistic they are. And yet, at the time, intellectual torpor. That's not good.
No.
That's bad. Don't read these books. They'll make your brain bad.
I mean, you know, like, it shouldn't really be all that surprising when you think about, the pushback for, just how with anything that, kids are getting super into, the older generations are oftentimes oh, that's just garbage. You can see that a lot in different music genres, rock and roll and stuff. But these books, I mean, comics and stuff too, but man, these books are so innocent, like we've been talking about. So that just, it's so weird to me to think that there would be a kid reading this and someone being like, well, that's just trash, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, it is that. It is, I think, a lot of is generational divides, and anything that becomes popular with younger people, it is inevitably hailed as disastrous and damaging because they are doing it, and obviously us old people know better, and we got along well without it. So why would you bother? Those are our way was the right way. So I think it is that push and pull will always be with us, probably. I don't think it's ever gonna go away. And I think, with hindsight, all we can do is kind of recognize it. There is one more quote from the book that I had pulled
Oh yeah, go for it. I'm
that
super curious.
I really like, and it is actually high. It is, the Kindle books, will have some certain things pre-highlighted, pre-underlined, this is a, I think they algorithmically figure out the things that people focus on, and so they highlight it for you before you even start. And it's when he is working on when Tom is working on some thing to make his own brain, like an artificial version of the alien energy. And let's see, Mr. Swift reacted with keen interest and offered help. But remember, son, he cautioned, at best, you can only hope to produce an ersatz brain energy, which will be vastly different from the real thing. Don't forget, Tom, the mind of a human being or any thinking inhabitant of our universe is based on a divine soul. No scientist must ever delude himself into thinking he can copy the work of our creator. I know that, Dad, Tom said soberly. Man's work will always be a crude groping compared to the miracles of nature. All I'm hoping to come up with here is a sort of stimulus response unit that we can use for testing any senses apparatus we devise. So, in the middle of this really zany adventure with Brungarians and alien robots, we get a very sober discussion about how man is not God, and we should not reach outside our grasp.
Hey, there's your moral.
Yes,
The for the kids book moral. Oh.
it kind of. It stood out, like, cause
It, yeah, I read that I finished up the book today and I read that this morning and it really did stand out. Yeah, for sure.
it's like cause everything else in this book is like, I think at some certain in certain ways purposefully avoiding substance. Like they don't want to dig into topics too heavily because they don't have the time to talk about it. They're worried about the adventure. They're worried about the plot, and then suddenly they have Tom trying to make an AI, basically, and Dad's like, "Remember, don't play God. You'll create monsters." And Tom's like, "Yeah, I know. I can't make souls. I know it." I'm like, "Okay, guys, that's a little weird to include this in the middle of your venture with your alien spy buddy and earthquake machines, but cool. Got it. Is that the sequel? Is Tom Swift and playing God? Not."
Yeah, you know, I did like that did kind of make me want him to have like a nemesis who does just that, you know, and they have, but it's not that, I know it's not that sort of series, but like it kind of gave you this moment of like, is this foreshadowing? But you know that it's not. You know that they're just having like a, I don't know. I wonder why they did decide to include that. Just like you can invent and stuff, but make sure you don't go too crazy. Like,
I
I
think
don't know.
I feel like it is along the same lines as the everyone's a good guy kind of thing. It's very much like it's a reminder, like, no, remember, like, despite all that criticism of it rotting boys' brains or whatever, I think it still is very much like everything in this book is very subtly reinforcing status quo of America
Yeah,
and
definitely.
reinforcing, like, no, we're the good guys. Spies are bad. You can't, souls are divine. All that stuff, even though the fact that, but then trying to, it is like, I think that's an interesting thing to me as I was reading it. That obviously, I don't think anyone involved with it really had any foresight in it. I don't know if they even thought of people reading this in 50 years, 50 years after this thing was published. But it has a very clear line of like, science fiction is always about social, the current social environment. You know, like 1984 is not about 1984. It's not about some future. It is about 19. It was about the year it was written. It was about 1948. It was about concerns about the British government having too much control and too much purview over people's lives. And so George Orwell wrote a book about a scary future where the government controls everything. And because he was concerned about that thing in 1948. And so when you write science fiction that is, that has all those kind of tropes of like of alien brain energies that can think and be and learn and have fear, by God, and of, you know, terrorists and all that, like it has all these trappings of science fiction, but it seems to go at great length to reinforce the status quo of Americana of 1961, of Cold War America. And it's an interesting dichotomy of like thinking of like putting yourself in the shoes of a kid in 1961, and you're like, oh man, a new Tom Swift book, I'm excited. And you're reading this and you're not thinking too much about it. But I'm like, I always think about, like, that's what, you know, kids' books, I think, are incredibly influential and incredibly important. And it, like, the way they're written teaches people how to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, it was dancing in my head the whole time about, like, people now who are, like, in their 60s and 70s who read these books growing up. What did they take from this back in the day? Did they take anything? Did they just go, oh, it's X-Man. I like X-Man. Who knows?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear, like be a fly on the wall for a conversation of, like, a bunch of kids talking about the reading the Tom Swift book. And, like were they all just like, jeepers, that X-Man? And, like, like you're saying, you know what I mean? Or were there moments when they were just like...
Well, I imagine the smarter, the, like, Isaac Asimov, he says he read the Swift books, which that makes perfect sense. Like, all those, you know, first and second wave big science fiction guys, the futurists, like, I bet they were all the right age to read these books as they were growing up. And then they end up writing, like, some of the most influential science fiction there ever has been. And I think, you know, like anything, the smarter kids read between the lines. They understand what's going on. They don't need to, despite people trying to hide things. You know, when you read a book, you know, it's really like, you can read, you know, what's going on. Like, I was a kid, even I knew it, like, when I was reading certain books as a kid, I'm like, there's something like the Hardy Boys and even Nancy Drew and all those books. You're always like, they're always a peek into the culture. And I think that's one of the things I'm taking away from this is, like, this is like a peak of the culture in 1961, and it's always very fascinating.
I agree. I think I had a second thought, and it just, like, scattered away from my brain. But, like, no, I think that's the biggest reason that I would end up recommending this series to someone, like you were saying before, just because it's, like, a piece of history, and it's really interesting to read all of, like, the viewpoints and everything else that comes along with it. And overall, it was definitely an interesting read, like, kind of dry, a little bit slow going, but I'm glad that I read it. I don't think I would have if we hadn't been looking for a book to read and talk about this month. I don't think I would have finished it, honestly. So
no, I mean, it is a weird cultural artifact.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's like walking through a museum. I love the Fallout video games.
Me too, yeah.
And this, it feels like all this kind of pulpy futurism from the 50s and 60s and earlier informs those games and, like, a lot of other fiction that is built or like that, with, like, weird vacuum tubes, everything, and giant rocket ships and, like, weird archetypal designs of spaceships and robots. Everything looks like the robot from Lost in Space. I would actually love to have a physical copy. Like, I looked up the cover art for that, and I'd like to see the illustrations, honestly, too, because it's neat. That's a neat thing. It took me back to, like, my childhood and, like, the books I read, you know. And I didn't read, I don't think I read Tom Swift, but I read Goosebumps, and I read,
oh man,
and I read Animorphs, and I read Wayside School books, and I read Encyclopedia Brown, and Book Fair was always my favorite time of year. And it, I don't know, got my brain turned a little bit. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too, because right now the manuscript I'm working on is, like, 1950s inspired space kind of story.
Right.
And so, like, the pieces of the dialogue and also the moments where I was just like, ooh, this description, like, how would I describe these sort of crazy settings, but make it feel like a little bit more immersive and in like more of a current writing style, that sort of thing. And like, what am I really wanting to see more of? Like, it was definitely a good thing to read for research. And you know, I always like a little bit more romance too. I could have gone for more of their double dates and stuff. So like, seeing what I would, you know, what I pieces of like the actual authentic work that now I'm trying to like emulate in a way, it was really cool to sit down and use this for research. So that was really neat. Now I want to play Fallout because you mentioned it.
I have played Fallout 3 more than any video game in my entire life.
I'm so bad at it. Like, I've played the beginning several times, and then I've watched Matt play it, and then I've played a ton of Fallout Shelter, and
I've played three, probably 600 hours.
oh wow.
And then four, probably another 200. I don't like four as much, but it's still fun. And three just hit, it was, I was the right time. And that, this is like a lot of, see, we got some other, I have a list of the other, some of the other Tom Swift books. These are specifically the Tom Swift Jr. books. We have Tom Swift in the Caves of Nuclear Fire, which, wow, that's pretty good. Tom Swift and his Sonic Boom Trap. Tom Swift and his G-Force Inverter. Tom Swift and his Atomic Earth Blaster. Tom
Whoa.
Swift on the Phantom Satellite. Tom Swift in the Space Solartron. A lot of Tom Swift and the Asteroid Pirates. A lot of.
Yeah, I saw that title too, and I went, you know, if I were to read another one,
I'd
I'm a
like,
little intrigued.
yeah, meet the pirates. Let's see how they rate.
Yeah.
How does what's his face? Appleton the second. How does he rate pirates? How's in particular? Anything else, Paige, you want to mention?
You know, I don't think so. I'm trying to think if I have any more, you know, chow quotes. But no, I'm glad that I'm glad that you wanted to do book club podcasts. This was really fun.
More reading is always good.
Yes.
Need to read. Read's important. You want to be a better writer? Be a better reader.
It's true, 'cause reading through books, even if you don't like them, like you learn more about writing styles, and it's cool to see. It was really cool to see. Just and remind myself how these books were written in like 1960, because it's been a long time since I've read like the old Nancy Drew books, and that's the closest thing I've ever read to this. So it
Right.
was neat. It was definitely cool.
Plug your stuff, Paige. What should people check out?
Oh,
Where can they buy your
sure.
books?
So you can buy both of my novels and then comics and short stories on Amazon. If you search Paige LaVoie, that's the easiest way to find all of the things. My newest release is called A Girl Called Monster, and it's a modern day Frankenstein story. And there's also a geeky diary that has a lot of conventions and crushes and cosplay called Confidence, the Diary of an Invisible Girl. And I stream writing stuff on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/PaigeLaVoie. So basically, most of my stuff online is some variation of my name. But yeah. I'd be delighted if you guys would come check out my stuff and things.
You should. I encourage you to do so, gentle listeners. I will have links to all of those things that Paige just mentioned in the show notes if you are audacious enough to go to the internet after listening to a podcast. It's a lot of work. But that'll do it for us today. Thank you, Paige, for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Paige for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. The show's website is seriofanaticist.com. You can find everything there. Please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/seriofanaticist. If you like the show, give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play Music. Recommend us to your friends. Subscribe. All those things help out the show, help me out. I appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.